Today's episode of The Dark Paranormal is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Companies and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Well, the holidays are almost here, and if you still have names on your list, don't panic, because Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful. They have thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you literally won't find anywhere else. And you'll find those presents that say, I know you, I know what you like, I know what you love. And the chances of you giving someone a present they already have are exceptionally small. There is an artistry set that I've just bought for my little niece, and I know it's a one-of-a-kind and she will adore it. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the US. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses. So when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting those artists, those small businesses, and every purchase is a chance to choose something remarkable and feel good about where your money goes. Because with every purchase you make with Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a non-profit partner of your choice, donating more than $3.1 million to date. And they have something for everyone, mums, dads, kids, teens, book lovers, gardeners, mixologists, you name it. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/darkparanormal. That's uncommongoods.com/darkparanormal for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
The point of this show is we feature as many true experiences considered dark and real that we can, mainly focused around locations considered to be haunted. Something truly terrifying to imagine, yes. But usually there can be an option to escape. Moving house, selling up, etc. But what if, like today's seemingly reluctant believer, you can't opt out? What if you can't simply move away from it? What if, in my opinion, something more existentially terrifying, it is attached to you? Because that's the quandary of today's submitter.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal,
Season 22.
Hello everyone and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Episode 7, Season 22. I can't believe we're this close to the finale already, but what I am excited for is to tell you all about how there will be a completely fresh Dark Paranormal for Season 23. And I do mean completely fresh. To use an analogy of a car, it's not just a lick of paint, it's a complete rehaul of the engine. Don't worry, the car will still be exactly as you know it. It will just appear to be slightly different, and hopefully for the better. I mentioned earlier that both I and my network sent out some questionnaires regarding what people do and don't like about the show. Now, there were two that stood out immediately as the most obvious ones. Both the network kind of pushed with, and both I believe I might have won on. So I will tell you them now, because there are enough changes going ahead that this is maybe 5% of the overall changes. Now, the first big one, obviously, adverts. Now, as I've said before, at this time of year, it's unavoidable. any podcast that draws big numbers, and thankfully I'm very fortunate enough to say we do, but therefore advertisers look at shows like ours and say, yes, please. But it does mean your experience gets watered down. Now, I do strongly suggest, and this is not just a push for Patreon, but at our lowest tier on Patreon, for the cost of less than a coffee per month, you can get ad-free access to all of our shows we put out on the main feed. Now, I'm not suggesting you join and you stay forever. I would, personally, join around Thanksgiving or the end of November, beginning of December, and end around the end of January. You're guaranteed to have missed the bulk of all of the sales adverts, all of the holiday season adverts, etc. And of course, not everyone's in a position to do that. I would say just make good use of that skip button during the holiday period. But to enhance your listening experience, as you know, we've introduced the Heartbeat intro at the start, a bit of a teaser, and I've stated to the network, I want no more than one advertisement going in at the start of the show. Now, yes, that will affect me monetarily, as will the next decision I've made, but these things are essential to make you feel more part of the experience. Because the second highest thing that was disliked about the show was fatigue, listener fatigue. Now, our network suggested to me that I start doing series. Now, the network suggested I start doing maybe series of episodes, which I pointed out I do. So, the next thing was I suggested I wanted to remove one of the three shows that we do each and every week. Obviously, they sell adverts on those shows and they did not want to do that, and we've compromised that the minisodes will now be bi-weekly. And I agree with that, because that will stop a form of burnout. And I did wonder about the amount of wonderful minisodes that you may not have heard simply through the amount of output we do. Now remember, The Dark Paranormal started out bi-weekly one show. So I think this is a case of less is more. And yes, it affects my revenue, but your experience comes first. So from season 23 onwards, these changes will take place. And I, for one, along with the other changes yet to come, some of which will be surprises, know that season 23 will be a complete change of direction into a very familiar land and our most interesting series yet. And of course, before I forget, a big thank you to our Patreon community who keep this show going. And if you'd like to join them, click the link in the show notes or head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, it's time. Lower your lights. Make yourself comfortable. And most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door. As we hear just why, I don't believe in ghosts, but... My name is absurdly long, foreign, and easily located in scientific literature. So, for the purposes of this entry, I'll go by my nickname, Bear. My wife introduced me to the dark paranormal a couple of years ago. We usually fall asleep listening to horror podcasts, this show being one of them. I have chronic insomnia, and have something to listen to help me keep my mind from spinning. We're both fans of the supernatural, and horror, and have listened to almost every episode. She's a Patreon, and I piggyback on her good taste. We currently live in New England, but I originally came over to the US over a decade ago for university as an international student. My family is Thai, and I was born and raised in Bangkok. Thailand is a bizarre hodgepodge of scientific advancement, strict Theravada Buddhism, and unchecked animism. The people believe in karma, mindfulness, and reincarnation, but also in black magic, mythical creatures, and nature spirits. Think witchcraft, but Asian. My mother is deeply religious. My father, an engineer, mostly humours her. I was raised Buddhist throughout my childhood. My brother and I were dragged to the temple every month, where our parents would pray and meditate for hours. Our upbringing was such that we were expected to believe in science, but also to take the supernatural at face value. My parents, in the same breath, would push me towards medical school while insisting that some obscure concoction blessed by a monk would cure the flu. While I still practice mindfulness out of habit, I wouldn't call myself religious. Buddhism, to me, feels more like psychology than theology. The Bible is about as real to me as Greek or Norse mythology, which makes it easy to dismiss a lot of religious themes. What's harder to dismiss are the things that keep happening in and around my family. Some of them long before I was born, so I can only retell what I've been told. My mother's side of the family has always been a bit off. Supposedly, my great-grandmother came back from the dead. According to family lore, she died, was placed in a coffin, and several days into the funeral, she climbed out of it in front of everyone. Unsurprisingly, guests fled in terror and never came back for the second funeral when she died for real years later. In her first death, she said she remembered waking up to a large gate, where she was met by two men in loincloths, one with bright red skin and the other with skin an unnaturally deep black. She felt parched and bent down to drink from a small pool in front of the gate. The men grabbed her by the arms, slammed her face first into a wall, and she woke up in her coffin. She was adamant that if she drank from that pool, she would not have come back. Now, I've tried to probe this story over the years, and the only thing everyone agrees on is this. Embalming wasn't common then. And whatever the explanation, everyone present swore my great-grandmother sat up in her coffin at her own funeral. Fast forward to the 1960s, my mother was living with her parents and six siblings in a rundown house behind a distillery, one of the most haunted places they ever lived. My mother was the oddball middle child who would sneak off to temple. She claimed she once astrally projected whilst meditating, stepping out of her body and seeing herself cross-legged on the floor. She says she saw spirits regularly in that house, but she also learned to live around them. There was one incident, though, one that changed her behaviour. The house had three floors, but the family slept on the second. The third floor was mostly unfinished, a small office and a single bed. Seeking peace and quiet, my mother would often go up there to read and sometimes fall asleep. One night, around 4 a.m., she woke to an old woman demanding to climb into bed with her. My mother cried out in protest, but the woman climbed on top of her and began to strangle her. In panic, my mother shut her eyes and chanted prayers. After what felt like several minutes, the hands unclenched from round her throat. She opened her eyes again to find herself alone in that room. She ran downstairs and never slept alone on that floor again. On another occasion, my aunt, a teenager at the time, was alone in the house during a home invasion. A stranger broke in, punched her in the stomach, gagged her, tied her up in the bathroom, and then he calmly searched the house for valuables. Then, suddenly, looked up at something in horror and ran screaming from the house, taking nothing with him. Upon the return of the family, they found my aunt bound and bruised, the door clearly smashed in. The police couldn't believe nothing was stolen, and she wasn't assaulted. She still vividly remembers the punch to the gut and the vile stench of the rag he shoved in her mouth, but still has no idea what he saw. But perhaps the most unusual member of my maternal family was my grandmother. She was ethnically Chinese. Her family long settled in Thailand. According to my mother and her siblings, my grandmother was a medium, but an unwilling host. Nobody alive seems to know exactly how it started, only that at some point, she began getting possessed. The pitch of her voice Her body language, even her posture, would change dramatically. She would walk differently, sit comfortably in positions that normally would cause her pain, and she would behave like a completely different person. It was always the same few spirits, most notably an old man and a young boy. If the old man possessed her, she would smoke and drink, despite usually doing neither. When the young boy took over, she developed a raging sweet tooth, was hyper and playful. These spirits weren't malevolent, overtly. They seemed to use her as a way to experience life. It was, however, deeply distressing for her. My grandfather took her to a temple where a monk said there was something about her bloodline that made her compatible as a medium, that the spirits chose her, and not much could be done. Over time, my grandmother became known in the community. People would visit to ask the spirits for guidance. The old man apparently knew herbs and traditional medicine. The boy was said to be clairvoyant. They advised on everything from home remedies to lottery numbers. My grandmother never charged for this. Whatever it was, mental illness, performance, or something else, there was no obvious benefit to her. She endured this for over a decade, and eventually she announced she was done. She hated the feeling of possession, the loss of control. The day she decided she would no longer act as a medium, she collapsed into a coma and died of a brain aneurysm a few weeks later. She was in her late 30s. No prior health issues. Doctors called it a freak accident. The monk said there was an order from above to behead her. I never met her. My family believes the medium role died with my grandmother, but the ability to sense the supernatural seems to have bled down the line. Which brings me to Thai folk religion and, unfortunately, to black magic. Thai folk religion is technically separate from Theravada Buddhism. It's a strange mix of animism, paganism, and sorcery that predates Buddhism. Whenever Buddhism spread, it never fully replaced the folk belief. They kind of fused. To this day, many Thais believe in both. The capabilities attributed to folk magic are unpalatable. Conjuring clumps of hair and fingernails, and buffalo hide inside an enemy's stomach. Telekinetically dislodging a disc from their spine, casting mind control spells, inflicting horrifying hallucinations, all supposedly achievable by practitioners of black magic. Children grew up being told to avoid certain places and behaviors because they might open the door to these things. And then there is Kumanthong. Kumanthong means golden boy. It's an amulet believed to contain the spirit of a stillborn or deceased child. Traditionally, the remains of a fetus or infant were ritually consecrated, coated in gold leaf, and anointed with the Nam Man Prai, or ghost oil, made from human fat, preferably taken from those who died violently because their spirits were thought to be more powerful. Owners believe the Kumanthong brings protection, good fortune, prosperity, and in exchange they would get food, toys, offerings, etc. My mother's family had one. I don't know where it came from, only that it lived with them and it was treated very much like a demanding, invisible child. My mother grew up leaving sweets and drinks for it, even affectionately calling it Big Brother Cumin. When my grandmother died, my mother took the amulet with her into her first apartment with my father, and she continued the offerings, if less consistently. Years later, my parents were able to buy their first house and they rented out the old apartment. Not long after, The new tenants complained that they'd spent the last month seeing a little boy running around the apartment at night, giggling, slamming doors, vanishing into hallways. My mother realized she'd never told the cumin they were moving. She'd prayed, told the spirit where they now lived, and invited him to follow. The tenants stopped complaining immediately. In our new house, visitors regularly reported doors opening and slamming on their own, and the sound of tiny footsteps upstairs when my brother and I were downstairs. At one point, my parents housed a cousin, whose high school was nearby. He snuck a friend in for an unauthorized sleepover in the middle of the night. That friend, let's call him Leopold, woke to find a naked boy with an old-fashioned Thai hairstyle straddling his chest and pounding on him with both fists. When Leopold tried to push him off, the child yanked his ears and kept screaming silently. Leopold bolted from the room, shrieking, waking the whole house, and refused to ever set foot in it again. My parents also claimed I had an imaginary friend as a toddler. When they asked who he was, I'd apparently say, "He's not little, he's very old. He says he died here." I don't remember this, but my parents do. When I was about 8, my parents decided our current home wasn't creepy enough, so they bought a plot of land and built a new house in what was basically the wilderness, a few acres surrounded by trees and dirt roads. Close to the city, but it felt like the middle of nowhere. But for the first time, my brother and I would have separate rooms. I was thrilled. My father let me design my room and even drew up custom furniture. Very soon after moving in, my mother started insisting I sleep elsewhere, usually in the master bedroom. She never really explained why. She was fine with me sleeping alone in other rooms. She just didn't want me sleeping alone in mine. Her explanation...
Does anyone really know what hormones do? There's so much talk about women's hormonal health, but most women are left even more confused about what it means for them and what to do about it. Let's leave that confusion behind as we head into the holiday season. Hormone Harmony is a game changer for women struggling with hormonal imbalances that leave them exhausted both physically and mentally. It only contains science-based ingredients that bring back comfort, energy, clarity, confidence, and a sense of balance. Perfect for enjoying the holidays and heading into the new year energized. You've heard me talk about them before, and Happy Mammoth, the company behind this phenomenal formula, has helped over 2.4 million women get their lives back and feel like themselves again after years or even decades of hormonal imbalances. The company surveyed 1,831 women to see how Hormone Harmony helped them, and the results are mind-blowing. 86% of women started losing weight, 77% say it improved their mood, and 100% say they feel like themselves again. Hormone Harmony has over 50,000 raving reviews from women all over the world, with 98% of them saying they gladly recommend it to friends and family. This holiday season, give yourself or the women in your life the gift of wellness. Because for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DARKPARANORMAL at checkout.
Personally, I can find it really hard to focus, and as a non-drinker, I can also find it tricky to try and wind down. And how you go about finding your personal vibe is your individual choice. Do you know there's a 100% American farm-grown online cannabis company that ship federally legal THC direct to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients so they can target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And our listeners get 20% off their first order at Mu.com with the promo code DARKPARANORMAL. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that just get you high. Mood gummies are optimized so it can take as little as 15 minutes to take you to the mood you desire. Like the Mind Magic gummies for creativity and focus. Or PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings. And there's a plethora of other gummies for you to find your perfect mood. These days we all know gummies just to get high can be bought from just about anywhere. But Mood have changed the game by combining premium federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get in the perfect mood in as little as 15 minutes with no dispensary lines or no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered discreetly to your door. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, as mentioned, our listeners can get 20% off their first order by entering the promo code DARKPARANORMAL. So go to Mood.com and find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for and let Mood find your perfect mood. And don't forget to enter the promo code DARKPARANORMAL for 20% off.
Yes, the holidays is indeed a time to put smiles on other people's faces, but what about putting a nice relaxed one on yours? Prioritize your rest, your comfort, and your connection with the holiday season with Avocado Green Mattress. Avocado products transform your home into a peaceful grounding retreat made with certified organic and sustainably sourced materials. From breathable bedding to handcrafted mattresses, Avocado is all about true comfort, so you can rest, recharge, and wake up refreshed all season long. And every product is thoughtfully made with both you and the planet in mind, so you can feel good about the comfort and quality you're bringing to your home. Dream of better, better for you, better for the planet. And with easy financing options with Affirm to make your purchase more accessible, you can prioritize rest and recharge with Avocado's organic comfort. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com today to create your natural oasis and save big during their holiday sale. Avocado, dream of better. Conditions were odd. The feng shui was bad. The headboard faced the wrong direction. The room sat at the end of a T intersection where evil spirits gather. Eventually, I stopped asking. I used the room mostly during the day for reading or homework. At night, I slept anywhere else. Even in the daylight, though, the room did feel wrong. I'd be sat at my desk, I'd look up, and I'd see a woman stood in my peripheral vision, pale skin, long, straight, dark hair, a white dress, and every time I turned to look straight at her, she was gone. I could never make out her face. I convinced myself it was my furniture tricking my eyes. I saw her like this for 10 years, and even later when I visited, only ever in that room. Because I rarely slept there, it became a de facto guest room. Cousins who stayed in it reported nightmares every night, waking up unrested. One guest moved out of the room to sleep on the couch downstairs after one night, reporting only that something in the room was really unsettling. When I was 9, my mother took me on a religious retreat to Chiang Mai in northern Thailand. People go to these places to pray, meditate, be around the mountains, stay in wood cabins amongst the trees and gardens. I hated it. My attention span was not built for hours upon hours of meditation. We arrived after dark and collapsed straight into bed. And that night, I had a nightmare. In the dream, I walked out of our cabin onto a stone pathway lined with bushes and trees. The path wound round some small clearing where a broken wagon was sat as a decoration. Next to it stood something impossibly tall. A humanoid figure, but as tall as the trees, maybe 15 meters. It had pale grey, ashy skin, lank dark hair, and huge bulging red eyes. The ribs were shown clearly under its skin. The hands and feet were far too large. It seemed to be wailing, yet it had no mouth. I woke up terrified and I told my mother. She dismissed it as nerves from sleeping in a strange place. The next morning, on our way to meditation,
I pointed at some red spider hibiscus flowers. And I said, the creature's eyes were that colour, Mum. And then I froze. Ahead of us was a stone path, flanked by plants, leading to a clearing with a broken decorative wagon. We'd not come this way at night. We'd never seen it before. The ground next to the wagon looked slightly sunken, like something huge had been standing there. I wanted to go home. My mother reminded me that we'd flown there and would be staying there the week. The monks and other adults took pity on me, the only child there. When my mother told one of the monks about my nightmare, he went quiet. "He's seen a preta," the monk said. "A hungry ghost. There are a lot of them round here. They're drawn to prayers and meditation." "Well, what do they want with him?" my mother asked. "They're here to ask him for merit and good karma," the monk replied. "Well, why him? Why not the adults?" "Because he can see them." He went on to explain that hungry ghosts had once been greedy, corrupt people who exploited others. And as punishment, they are now permanently starving because their mouths are the size of a pinprick. "He said it had no mouth," my mother pointed out. "Oh, it does. It's just that small," the monk said. They said a prayer for me, and I didn't see the creature again. Over the years, monks who'd never met each other told me variations of the same thing. That in a past life, I'd been some sort of soldier, a pyromaniac who burned people, which was why I now reacted badly to heat and broke out in rashes. They also warned me there were vengeful spirits around me, trying to make my life miserable. It's not exactly the standard fortune people get at temple. By my teens, I developed a kind of radar. Certain places just felt wrong. When I transferred to a new high school, there were corridors I avoided because something in me recoiled. Later, I learned that the school had once been a theatre that burnt down mid-performance, trapping everyone inside. Life in Thailand was unstable for other reasons too. After a couple of violent riots and army tanks on my route to school, I decided I'd leave as soon as I could. I studied hard, got a place at university in the US, and I left just as a new military junta took power back home. My university was founded in the 1800s, America's first research institution. Lots of old buildings, lots of rumours about secret experiments. There was one building, Remsen Hall, that felt off from my very first week. By all appearances, it was normal. Inside, though, I constantly felt watched. I'd walk down apparently empty corridors and hear footsteps behind me. If I bent a drink from an old brass fountain, I would feel eyes on the back of my neck. I told myself it was the stress or the architecture of the building. Years later, I learned Remsen Hall is the only building on campus that houses human remains. The ashes of a former university president, Ira Remsen, sealed into the wall behind a plaque at the entrance. Junior year, I finally moved off campus into my first apartment. And I soon realized there was already someone there. Out of the corner of my eye, I kept seeing the same figure. Shoulder-length, choppy brown hair, tan skin, always just at the edge of my vision. Whenever I turned my head, they would vanish. I think it was a woman, but I never saw her clearly enough to be sure. I decided my brain was playing tricks and I ignored it. Later that year, a flood in the basement caused an electrical fault, and the building caught fire. Thankfully, nobody was hurt, but we couldn't return for a month.
The building had been renovating a new penthouse unit. After the fire, no one wanted it, so they slashed the rent. My friend and I took it. The not quite visible figure came with me. Different building, same peripheral presence. After college, I got a research job in a new city, working in a neurology lab, studying dementia. I shuttled between the lab and the hospital and eventually mapped a shortcut through the back entrance, which meant walking past the morgue. Vans carrying bodies in and out were a common sight, so it didn't bother me much. One day I happened to pass just as a body bag was being unzipped. I caught a flash of a red plaid shirt inside, and it reminded me of a superstition from home. Never stare at newly dead bodies, or their spirits may latch onto you. I kept walking to the neurology clinic, where I was scheduled to administer cognitive tests. One test required the patient to name as many items as possible that I was wearing or holding. I sat across from him and said, "Look at me and name any items I'm holding or wearing." The patient's dementia was advanced, so I wasn't expecting much. He stared past me, unfocused. "Once again, name any items I'm wearing or holding," I repeated. "Shirt," he said at last. "Mm-hmm," I wrote it down. "Red, red shirt," he added. I glanced down at my solid blue shirt, then dutifully wrote his incorrect response. "Shirt, red shirt," he kept saying. I continued to transcribe his answers. "Red plaid shirt," he said. I looked up. "Red plaid shirt, plaid shirt, red shirt." He repeated variants of those three words until the timer went off. The whole time, his eyes were fixed on a point just over my shoulder, as though something behind me was far more interesting than I was. After that, my life was supernaturally quiet for 6 years. I finished grad school, I got married, I changed jobs. For a while, I thought maybe the weirdness had finally burnt itself out. Then, last year, my wife and I attended an aerospace medicine conference in Chicago. The Hyatt was fully booked, so we ended up at an older hotel on the Magnificent Mile, built in the 1920s. Inside, it was modern enough, but the bones, elevators, door frames, they all showed its age. We checked our room, we liked it, and we went to bed. I wake in the dark to a cold hand shaking my upper arm, firm, deliberate. My wife is always freezing, so it's normal for me to wake up to her ice-blocked feet pressed against my legs. But she'd fell asleep on my left. This hand was on my right. I checked the time, 3:49 a.m. "What do you need?" I mumbled, expecting to hear my wife's voice, hoping to hear. There was no answer, just a sense of someone standing over me. As my eyes adjusted, I saw a figure on my right-hand side. A woman, I think, in a dress with a polka dot pattern. Her head and shoulders veiled in something dark yet translucent, like a sheet of a shadow. I couldn't see her face. There was something off about the way she moved, or rather, didn't move. She hovered over me with a faint, unnatural swaying, like an idle, non-playable character from a video game. Then, to my left, I felt my wife stir in her sleep. She was still laying beside me, and the figure still remained to my right. Two thoughts hit me very clearly. Number one, I really did not want to wake my wife if I didn't have to. Number two, I had no plausible explanation for what I was seeing, and I hated that. If this was a hallucination, it wasn't just visual. Something cold had shaken me awake. I stared at the figure,
trying to force it to resolve into a coat or a curtain or anything. As I watched, it began to fade. Not dissolving into smoke, just becoming less and less opaque, until it was simply not there. It took maybe 30 seconds, and it was only at this point that I realized how cold I was. I overheat easily and don't wear a shirt to bed, but I was shivering hard enough that I got up, put on a t-shirt out of my suitcase, and climbed back under the covers. An hour later, almost to the second, 4:49 a.m., I woke again. A hand waved in front of my face, not touching, just hovering, like checking I'm alive. It was red, with knotted, spindly fingers. Again, my wife sleeping peacefully beside me, I blinked and the hand was gone. It would be so comforting to write it off as sleep paralysis or some hypnopompic hallucination. Maybe my brain botched the transition between REM and wakefulness and dumped fragments of my dreams into the room. The problem was I wasn't paralyzed. I moved, I sat up. I felt the sheets, the mattress, the bite of the cold air. When I woke properly in the morning, I was still wearing the shirt I put on in the middle of the night. So I know at least some of it happened in full consciousness. At the time, I was testing a sleep tracking biosensor as part of my job. When I checked the data, there were two sharp awakenings logged exactly at 3:49 and 4:49 a.m. That's not conclusive proof of anything, but it did confirm I was awake and alert at those times. The following night, I woke to see the same woman again. This time, she was bent over in a crouch, hovering directly above my wife, her veiled face inches from my wife's face. My wife slept through it. I watched for a while, decided I had no tools to deal with this, and I fell back to sleep. My wife made me include that last bit. She cannot believe I just let it loom menacingly over her and did nothing. I don't actually believe in ghosts, for the record. But what happened in that hotel room was probably some perfect storm of exhaustion, cold, neurological misfires. Still, something about the timing, the physical contact, the way the figure faded as opposed to vanishing, and how neatly the sleep data lined up. Well, it all sits in my mind like a splinter. A few months ago, my brother had renovated our childhood home. He knocked down the wall between my old room and his to make one big master bedroom. He and his wife now sleep where I used to see the woman in white. Recently, my mother called, and referring to my brother, said, "She says their dog's been barking at something in that room between 3 and 4 in the morning. Every night it won't stop. They can't see anything. But she says something feels off. She's scared." I hesitated and then told my mother about the woman in my old bedroom. "I figured that was the case," my mother replied calmly. "Does she stand by the door?" I went very, very still. I'd never told her that detail. "Yes," I said, "by the door." "I haven't seen her," my mother said, "but I know." She then told me something about the house that I'd never heard. On the very first night we spent there, someone rang the gate bell repeatedly at 2 a.m. My parents went down and found a strange woman waiting at the gate. "Oh," she said, smiling. "So you two have arrived." Something in the way she said it made my mother feel she wasn't talking about arriving at the front gate, but about something else. As if she'd been waiting a long time for them to move there. The woman then asked to be let in. My parents, deciding she was probably mentally unstable, refused. The stranger bowed and exclaimed, "Both of you here? Fancy that." Then said something in what my mother described as an ancient-sounding language, turned and walked down the road. My father looked after her. There was no one there. It was as if she'd vanished into thin air. Anyway, that's all. I know this is long. I don't really have anyone in my everyday life I can say these things to without jeopardizing my reputation as a rational scientist. I spend my days being the voice of data and evidence, and I can't exactly turn around and start talking about hungry ghosts, necromancy babies, and women at the gate who disappear. So I'm telling you instead. Many thanks, Burr. Well, Burr, thank you so much for one of the most vivid and visual experiences I think we've had in a long time. Also, Burr's probably listening as he's listening through his partner's Patreon. And well done you for taking the wise choice. But I would say Burr's email was originally much longer. However, Burr is a very funny individual, and I did have to cut out some of the points, which were a bit more humour-based. After all, this is a dark paranormal podcast, and amongst the long email that did contain various bits of rather funny humour, there is a very dark experience that took place here, and I think we can all agree on that. So, Burr, thank you so much for spending the time to send in such a fantastic experience. Don't forget, guys, our submissions never close, so if you have an experience that you think would suit the dark paranormal, a minisode, or indeed a shorter experience that could go on our Patreon show, Dark Bites, either head over to our website, thedarkparanormal.com, and click Submit My Experience, or go to the links in the show notes, and there you can click right through to that page. Also in the show notes are links to our Patreon, where you can get a free week's trial period of any tier of our Patreon for free. And at this time of year, when the adverts are thick, fast and steady, it's a really great time to go and check out both the Patreon and the wonderful community over there. But right now, I'm going to bid you all farewell. Thank you for joining me on this amazing experience from Burr, and I'll speak to you all next week. But until then, remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.